Susan, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clara Byrne. You're very welcome to get in touch with us today. The text number is 51551. The email address, saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us in the studio today, we have John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD and Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee. Mary Lou MacDonald, Vice President of Sinn Féin and Member of the Public Accounts Committee. And another member of the Public Accounts Committee is Robert Dowds, Labour TD, who's also with us, along with Alison O'Connor, political columnist with the Irish Examiner, and Stephen O'Byrne's Director of MKC Communications. You're all very welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Now, it's still front page news today. It's likely to be for some time to come, of course, the payment of €750,000 to the former CEO of the Central Remedial Clinic from funds raised by the friends and supporters of the CRC. And if you're listening to the news bulletin, you will have heard Minister for Finance, Michael Noonan, referring to it, giving his response today. But I want to remind us really of exactly what was revealed at the Public Accounts Committee this week. And let's have a listen to Barry O'Brien, who's the HSE Human Resources Director.
Mr. Kiley received in his final salary payment from the CRC in June 2013 the following amounts in addition to his basic pay. He received €200,000 tax-free. He received €273,336 taxable, a total additional payment of €473,336. In addition, an amount of €268,689 was paid to Mercers to ensure that Mr. Kiley's pension stroke lump sum benefits would not be less than if Mr. Kiley had continued to remain on as chief executive until November 2016. At about the time of this final payment, an amount of €700,000 in two instalments of €450,000 and €250,000 was paid by the friends and supporters of the CRC that was described in the draft internal accounts as a donation. It was also agreed by the board that the terms of Mr. Kiley's settlement would be confidential and that a legally binding confidential agreement would be put in place.
So there are the numbers, but what about the real impact of all of that? Well, it was brought into sharp relief on Morning Ireland yesterday when Gavin Jennings spoke to Maria Nolan, whose 17-month-old son is a client of the CRC.
Maria, there will be people listening this morning, many of whom will have given money to the Central Remedial Clinic over the years, and many who want to continue to help children like your son. But they're torn now, thinking that, well, last year, for example, half that money didn't go to services. It went to pay off a former boss. What would you say to people who are passing a bucket or a donation and are torn, thinking, well, I want to help, but I don't want my money to go and to pay salaries or to pay pensions like that?
I understand completely. Before I had O'Shea, I knew of the CRC, but I didn't know really what it did. I just beg people. I know money is scarce and people don't have money to give sometimes to charities, but please don't pass the bucket on the street. Do give. Just think of my son. Children like O'Shea and adults like O'Shea will be like this for the rest of his life. He'll always need the CRC. And please don't pass it. Beg of you, don't pass it. You never know when you might need it yourself. I didn't think when I had my baby that I would need a CRC. And I highly, highly need it. And I will always need it. So please don't pass it.
That's Maria Nolan there. I think John McGuinness is quite distressing listening to that today, given the week that we've had. You're chairman, of course, of the Public Accounts Committee. As the dust settles on what happened, just put into context, really, what you heard during the week and what you think is going to happen as a result.
Well, I think that what we heard as a committee in terms of our investigation into CRC was something that we didn't expect to hear. We thought that the €200,000 lump sum was the extent of it. And that only came up because of the fact that Shane Ross had introduced the CRC accounts at the end of one meeting. And the other issue that arose at that meeting was the fee which was being paid to the Martyr Hospital of in excess of £650,000. In fact, it wasn't a fee. It was to do with pension. It was a perfectly reasonable explanation given. It's similar to the tag put on a donation from friends to CRC. I have to say that people at that meeting were absolutely horrified and shocked at this shameful behaviour. And I think they were even more shocked because of the fact that Mr. Condon, who was a former CEO, was before us during the course of this paperwork being presented to the Public Accounts Committee. And as a board member for, I think, 8 years, and as CEO for a number of months, he denied having any knowledge about any of this. So it made the whole story, I suppose, of this more horrifying for all of us.
They also, all these people sit on the board of the Friends and Supporters as well, and they sit on the board of the Care Trust, which gives 50% of the money into this complicated structure, whereby the Care Trust gives money to the Friends. And Brian Conlon and lots of other people on that board, former members of the board, they sit on all three.
Yeah, and we raised this originally with the directors when they came before us, and we told them that it was unacceptable. They considered it to be just standard practice.
But how can you have corporate governance when the same people are signing things off on three boards?
You can't have it. It was a complete collapse of good governance, of politics over all of those years, that the health boards and the HSE did not put into place a robust system to check on every cent that was being spent by the Section 38 organisations that received these grants. That is an absolute fact. But nobody expected, I think, that this story about the CRC would emerge the way that it did. At a time when they had €12 million in the bank, and Deputy Dowd's here, Robert, can tell you that there was buildings falling down, roofs leaking, services being cut back, those at the front line were being affected, more pressure was being put on them. And you heard that story from RT Morning Ireland. There was many stories like that told right across the country. Mm-hmm. And these people who were managing the affairs of CRC could see all of that at first hand, and yet they still continued to pay in the way that they did. They also had a separate billing arrangement or credit card arrangement worked by CRC Medical Devices Limited, which apparently paid sums to people who were working at senior level within CRC.
So as a salary top-up?
Not a salary. I don't know what it was. It was a credit card held by individuals working with CRC, but yet the statements went to Mr. Kiley at the CRC Medical Devices Limited. So the paperwork is now only beginning to emerge, and some of it was presented as we were discussing. In fact, Mary Lou MacDonald was in possession asking questions when the letter was circulated. So the information is only beginning to spill out.
So there's a lot more to happen.
And we have to keep our options open in the context of listening to all of the information as it comes. We've asked that the Gardaí and the Office of Corporate Enforcement would also keep a watching eye on all of this as it spills out. And I think that Michael Noonan was right. We need to complete our work. We need to get all of the information together so that whatever action is going to be taken by some other agency of the state, if necessary, it can be done swiftly and properly. And those that have been doing wrong can be brought to book on the basis of what we find out.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that Mr. Cregan will come before us separately.
He's the interim administrator, so the people know, of the CRC.
He will brief us on all of the paperwork and that he has and what he has found. And on the same day, we hope to bring before us, or we will bring before us, the board, the remuneration committee, Mr. Conlon, Mr. Kiley, and we'll go through it in detail with them. And I hope that can be done within a matter of weeks.
Okay,
because this is too much of a public interest story. It is impacting in a negative way on too many organisations and people, and we need to insist on the reform and the action as soon as possible.
So you want Paul Kiley, Brian Conlon and the members of the former board back in front of you?
Yes.
Okay, Mary Lou, can I ask you about...
Sorry, John. Because it's important. I think that the chairman, having made the remarks that were made this morning about money being saved, that this was the best and less costly way out, that information should be kept for the Public Accounts Committee.
I was just going to ask you about that, just to let people know that some of the reports in the papers today suggest that they wanted rid of Paul Kiley, that his salary was too high and that this was the cheapest way to do it. And you're saying that information shouldn't have been given to the newspapers today?
No, that's fine. But it should also have been given to the interim CEO of CRC. And anyone that has information like that should bring it forward and give it to the relevant people that are acting on this, be it the Public Accounts Committee or be it the HSE in the person Mr. Cregan at CRC. And it is urgent. And I would appeal to them, if they have further information, to not waste time and to bring it forward.
OK, Mary Lou, does that mitigate at all in terms of what happened at the CRC, that this was the best way to get Mr. Kiely out because he was being paid too much?
But can I just first of all say, Claire, that I really hope that Mr. Kiely, Mr. Conlon, Mr. Nugent, Mr. Goulding were listening to Maria Nolan when she spoke about her baby Oisin. Because the really distressing thing on the back of all of these revelations, which, as John has said, we certainly didn't expect at committee, has been an enormous sense of not just shock, but almost a numb sensation for people. So I hope that all of those gentlemen who have presided over this unmitigated mess and scandal were listening to that woman. And I hope when they come before us again, they come in a frame of mind and on a very clear understanding that when they come before our committee, they come to give the full facts, not to play games with us, not to dodge questions, to answer the questions and to present the full facts. And I hope at this stage they understand that the efforts they have made to play a game of cat and mouse with us as elected members who represent the people have failed and have boomeranged back on them. So it's in their best interest to come at this late stage and tell the full unvarnished truth. In terms of Mr. Goulding's claim that this was a mechanism to save money, can I say this? At this stage, we have gotten this information piecemeal. We've had to pressure the information that we have gotten. I have confidence now that the interim administrator, Mr. Cregan, will come forward with all of the paperwork, with all of the facts that we need to be in possession of. And as regards the motives of Mr. Goulding or anybody else for coming to this arrangement with Mr. Kiely, I think we should withhold judgment on their motives until we see the full facts.
Well, we
and
don't
the facts,
really
we,
need
the facts
Mary Lou,
we know
if you,
now,
if,
Claire.
If that were the case, that they were saving money, right, by doing this deal. Why the confidentiality agreement?
Well, as I say, there are questions that you would have to put to them. The facts as we know them are as follows. This was an organisation on the watch of the HSE that was deliberately and for a long period of time breaching public policy because in the minds of some, it seems, senior executives are more equal than others and they can set aside the rules and regulations that apply to other people. They were breaking the rules. They knew they were breaking the rules. They continued to break the rules. But not alone did they break the rules in respect of salary, they went on to break outrageously the rules, not just in terms of the HSE, but in terms of their own memorandum of understanding, their own rules and regulations in terms of the pension that they awarded to Mr. Kiely. Not alone that, it now appears that they were breaking the rules and playing fast and loose with Visa card accounts, perhaps, in terms of expenses, perhaps for travel and entertainment. Perhaps, I add the perhaps because we don't have certainty around all of that. They have acted with utter contempt for their staff, for their service users. And when they appeared before us, for contempt towards an Oireachtas committee. That's how serious this is. And I absolutely agree that at some stage It seems to me that
that's
it will be necessary. It will be
for
necessary for other agencies of the state to intervene, and as they should. But we, as the committee, are absolutely determined to complete our work. Nobody should attempt to frustrate that work. It's important that people have the facts, that we lift the lid on this, because at the end of the day, Maria Nugent and her little baby Oisin,
Maria Nolan
and her baby Oisin still require these services, and she is just one of very many people across the country who have been left literally winded and gobsmacked by these outrageous revelations.
Robert Dowds, you in the Irish Times today are saying that, you know, this money should be returned, that Paul Kiely should return this money, but what mechanisms exist to get that money back if he doesn't, as many have been saying, do the decent thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it would be much easier if he would take unilateral action himself, and he is under huge pressure because essentially every elected representative who's spoken on this subject has asked him to pay the money back, and he's under pressure also from Hamilton Goulding in that regard, although I have some doubts as to some of what he was saying.
Hamilton Goulding, the board member.
Yes, But
what do you have doubts about?
Well, I have doubts about the question of whether this was the only way to deal with Mr. Kiely in terms of his payoff. I mean, I would be very interested to hear what they have to say when they come into the Public Accounts Committee again on that subject. I mean, if I can look at this from a slightly different angle, I was a teacher in a school under the patronage of the CRC, and in a sense, we were the poor relations because we were out in Clondalkin, whereas their headquarters was in Clontarf. And we were the poor relation. If you drove in the gate of that school, you would see immediately we're the poor relation. I mean, the school has a leaking roof. It has dodgy electrics. I mean, this is not an indication of somebody who was a very hands-on CEO. I think probably Mr. Kiely did a great deal more in Clontarf, but certainly that wouldn't have been my impression of him from our point of view.
And how were you met when you tried to get funds to fix things like the leaking roof? And do you have a recollection of how you were dealt with?
I suppose the big problem was that, I mean, I'd had a lot of experience of being on boards of management of other schools because I was in mainstream teaching before I worked there. And it was really that the key people were very far removed from you. I mean, in any other school I'd worked in, the chair of the board of management was very much on hand and, you know, actively involved, whereas in this case, you know, he wasn't. But, I mean, it really, really is important that this is sorted out. I mean, the quote we heard from Maria Nolan in a sense focuses on that. I mean, it has been absolutely devastating for the staff and for the parents and students what has happened, and the sooner we resolve this the better. And another thing I feel I should say is that I think the HSE, while they have been very slow to get actively involved in this, now that they are involved, they seem to be doing a good job, and they have an opportunity here to help to set up good governance in a voluntary organisation. And if they do that, I think it will be very useful for other organisations.
Across the board.
Because, I mean, we really need a board that represents all the interests in the institution, whether it be the students, the parents, the staff, both on the health side and on the education side. Really, all those interests should be represented on the board. And so there is a real opportunity here. And I hope that the HSE take this opportunity to set up a structure which is much more satisfactory for everybody.
I just want to go back to the issue of the money, because listeners are getting in touch with us wondering how that money can be returned, given that Michael Fingleton's million never came back. And people will remember that bonus was paid when IBRC was under the control of the state or had just entered that phase. I mean, it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, when it comes to compelling Mr. Kiely to give this money back, will we be able to do that?
I think that depends. We can't, fully answer that question at this stage. However, I think a pivotal consideration will be whether or not the CRC was in breach of its own rules in making this donation from one arm of the organisation to the other, doing it in a way that was veiled in secrecy and so on. I think we have to establish all of those. But let your listeners be very clear, and I think I can speak for the committee, I probably speak for everybody in saying this. If there is any possibility whatsoever, any channel for recouping all or some of those monies, it will be found and the monies will be recouped. But we're just not in a position at this stage. The just and right thing, of course, is that money would be returned. I think we all know that.
I said IBRC there when I meant Irish Nationwide. But
there are legal
issues
in relation to that we haven't quite got to the end of yet, in relation to the workings of CRC Medical Devices, Friends and CRC itself. So we need to clarify all of those before we can clearly put in place our opinion or our suggestion in relation to how that money should be paid back.
What about other organisations, John?
It was quite different than the money that was paid in the Fingleton case. This is a different, very different situation, and we are pursuing it. So I think we should get to the end of our hearings first before any recommendation is made. But John Deasy, at that meeting, asked, was he paid a lump sum? He said that he was paid 200,000 euros. And John Deasy asked him to reflect on that, and he asked him how he felt about it. And then John Deasy, I think, asked him...
Was a long pause.
Was he going to pay it back? So the point is, there is a lot of work to be undertaken by PSC before we get to this point. And I think that the meeting with the board will clarify that. But there are questions to be asked out of Mr. Goulding's statement. Why were they trying to get rid of, if you like, Mr. Kiley? Why were they trying to reach an agreement about him? And why did the board not tell us that when they came before us? And why was there a legal document signed up to keep it secret?
Confidentiality agreement.
Could I say, Claire,
Stephen O'Byrne, yes,
with due respect to what John has just said, I think the real answers will emanate, not maybe, yes, we get further elaboration from the committee members, I think, but it's the forensic administration being done now by John Cregan for the HSE. I think this is where the real evidence will emerge about the authenticity or the orthodoxy or not of this particular sweetheart deal that was done. And I think that what puzzles me, not only like about the demoralising effect this is having across society after, you know, we've gone through 5 years of, you know, most people in this country suffering to varying degrees. I think there's been a huge demoralisation effect across society caused by these latest revelations. But one puzzling thing, and I mean, Robert touched on it. What was these enormous funds raised by the various fundraising arms and activities of the CRC for? I mean, when you have a leaking roof or whatever, you would expect that you can go and use those funds, which presumably most people in the best intent would imagine that's what it's for. Whereas it appears that there was built up a multi-million pound, I don't know, I mean, I'm loath to use the phrase slush fund for management, but it is extraordinary. Like, why was that money kept in reserve when there were crying needs out in Clondalkin on the part of parents? We heard people during the week highlighting the fact that the hours had been cut back on the vital services for their children. And yet we're
in
told,
half in some cases. And yeah, then Tom Clonan, I heard it on playback this morning.
And he has a very moving article in the Irish Times.
His child
today
waited a year from the prescription of a wheelchair to the actual delivery of it.
Like, what really puzzles me and is that number one, the you know, why the money wasn't being used for the proper purposes. And secondly, then, I'm a board member of the ISPCC, and I have to say that it has had, going back to late November, it has had a very detrimental effect on the fundraising carried out by all organisations. And I think the announcement yesterday of the regulator is welcome. But like, we had a banking regulator, so it's not just enough to set up an office. It's to ensure that whoever is in the office of the charities regulator will be empowered to do a proper job and will do that job. Because there is a lack of public there is a lack of public confidence. And as I say, I know it firsthand. It has impacted on the fundraising over Christmas and before Christmas, which is a very valuable time for all charities, but they have been badly hit to varying degrees.
Alison, that's no surprise, though, surely, that
no,
fundraising
it isn't,
would
and that's
hit.
Why I think John McGuinness was raising earlier the importance of getting this cleared up speedily, and I think that's one of the other reasons, so that things can be sorted. And you would hope that at the end of all of this, the CRC will end up benefiting in terms of being a much better run outfit, and the clients who are supposed to be the ones for whom its purpose was set up will get better care. But on a more general level, to me, it was a very important week. Less so because of Irish Water before the committee, particularly a CRC, even what we heard from the executives at St. Vincent's Hospital. In terms of our public life and accountability, I thought it was quite stunning, actually. I mean, it was stunning to hear what they said, and it was stunning to hear them ask the questions. And I think that our politicians deserve congratulations for that. And notwithstanding how long it's taken the HSE to take this thing in harness, and I'd have to wonder that if it was happening at the CRC, are we going to see something similar in other places? That it was a first, really, this sense that something wrong has happened here. It's been played out in public. It hasn't taken 5 years from when we've heard, you know, when it was revealed, And there is a sense, and hopefully we won't be disappointed in this, that there will be an outcome.
But you
and
know,
the other
Alison,
thing that stuns
Alison,
me...
You can
yeah.
take that view, right? And Enda Kenny said, this is, you know, old politics. This is what we're seeing here. But these decisions
well, I didn't
were
think
taken
it was,
in
no,
the
no,
last
I,
couple
I,
of
I
months.
Was, that was actually something I was going to say. I mean, to say that it's old politics, I think, suits him. Mm-hmm. And it shows, if you like, the lack of the government's, this whole thing of the pencil revolution at the election and changing the culture. Isn't it stunning that this survived the recession? It survived the IMF. And isn't it amazing that these guys, and they are in this instance all guys, that they didn't even, there's no even slight sense of shame when they were being questioned. I mean, their chutzpah, if that's the word, before the committee, and how the information just had to be dragged out of them. And this kind of Marie Antoinette sense of, or
it's
L'Oreal,
entitlement, yeah.
I'm worth it, mm-hmm. you know? And it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what everyone else has been through, it doesn't matter if the clients at the CRC have got their hours halved, I'm worth that money.
Robert Dennis.
Could I just say something, going back to what Stephen was saying about the fund. The reality is that the day-to-day spending for the CRC largely comes from the state through the wages for the staff and money for other purposes. The extra money that is collected, it would be very useful in terms of dealing with the kind of issue that Tom Clonan referred to, where there are delays in provision of wheelchairs. That's the sort of thing it should be used for. It should also probably, I think, be channeled towards adult services, because although there is some money from the state for that, I think that is one of the areas, that is probably the area where people who've gone through CRC services are most deprived.
It's quite obnoxious though, isn't it, when we're talking about this, you know, people
absolutely.
Waiting for
yeah.
things
absolutely
like obnoxious. Wheelchairs.
Yeah. The notion of a child growing out of a wheelchair and his limbs growing back
yeah,
in himself.
The poor
I mean,
little
it's savage, isn't it?
But the other thing to say, more generally, sort of drawing back a little bit from the CRC and looking at the general commentary around it, and I think this has to be said, because I heard James Riley on Taoiseach correctly commenting in public and expressing their shock and horror at all of this. It's happened on their watch. And I just think it's wrong to simply say that this is a legacy issue or this is historical. And to this very day, as Alison has pointed out, when these individuals presented at committee, certainly their attitudes hadn't undergone any cultural revolution or any form of change. They still had that self-same
but
sense.
But they're all
the
thinking. I was thinking about this for in the day or two afterwards. Where does this come from? How do we still have it? And for me, it's as basic as the TDs and the senators in the Oireachtas, that you cannot go onto the Oireachtas website and look up their expenses and they're full and that they're fully vouched. That is a relatively small thing, you could say, but it's so symbolic of saying this is the way we do business in this country. Anything less is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. We have seen after 6 years of austerity and having the IMF that culture quite extraordinarily still exists.
John McGuinness, well, a lot of the guys on this board, the ones who resigned, and Paul Kiely and Brian Connolly, they all had Fianna Fáil links. They were all Bertie's mates, weren't they?
I don't know that. I have heard that is the case, but that doesn't prevent me or anybody else on the committee from doing what is necessary.
But what do you think of what Enda said about this being old politics and the legacy issues?
No, it is old politics to
is
that
extent. Is it Fianna Fáil politics?
Well, it's not my Fianna Fáil politics anyway, and I would distance myself from any of them in relation to that. I don't think that comes into play in terms of the work on the Public Accounts Committee. I think that it is a culture that is well established right across agencies and departments that needs to be broken. I think that the whole issue of how this emerged arises from the attitude within the old health boards and the HSE. They were simply pushing out money to these organisations under Section 38 and indeed Section 39 grants. These agencies and organisations were delivering the services. So the government down through 20 years had washed their hands of it. the cards should go
take
up.
Take the money and but do what you will with it.
John, I think you're being disingenuous in saying, in not properly acknowledging the Fianna Fáil links here. I mean, they're as obvious as the nose in my face. And going back to the point of how we're going to learn about this as a society is we have to acknowledge what went on and how it went on. And it suits Fianna Fáil, notwithstanding the excellent work that you're doing and the PAC is doing, to kind of pretend like this is in the past, really nothing to do with us.
But on the other hand, let me answer that, Stephen. That has nothing whatsoever to do with the work of the Public Accounts Committee. And if anything, I have shown as chairman of that committee, I don't care what political party they're associated
with,
quite
frankly.
That's
not my point, John. Let me address your point.
I acknowledge fully that these people had a Fianna Fáil connection. And in fact, Shane Ross brought that to the fore in the context of our Public Accounts Committee. So I'm not shying away from it. But don't paint us all with the one brush.
I would also say, I mean, I was going to come in and make the point, Claire, that I would actually disagree with Alison to a point. You can, you know, trace perhaps a particular lineage to some of the people. But I think we're talking really about the proper governance rules that should apply, whether we're talking about public companies, private state companies or charities. It's the same set of rules, and you know, and all of this has broken, and I mean, obviously continued.
But we don't disagree, Stephen, just to clarify. We're not disagreeing. I'm talking about who was in government for 20 years and who set the standard there.
Okay, but what I'm saying is this persisted long after the change of government in March 2011, you know, as we know now, unfortunately. But what I'm saying is that I think it is to miss the point if we overly concentrate on the political pedigree of a certain group of people, because I think, and somebody said it earlier, the same kind of stories, I think, to varying degrees will emerge as the HSE tightens the screw, so to speak, as it continues its audit of all kinds of state-funded or health in the healthcare arena. You know, we see now that this isn't just about the CRC, but obviously there's a process in play now across the acute hospitals, across all state-funded organisations. And I'm sure there will be other CRC type revelations, not maybe to the same shocking degree, and hopefully not. But we don't know.
This comes back.
I mean, I agree with what Alison was saying, but this comes back though to the point that I made earlier, that there is an opportunity here to set up a board based on the interests of those involved, and that template will need to be put across other voluntary bodies. When we saw St. Vincent's.
I'm going to stop you there because I have to take a break, but that's exactly what I'm going to come to next. St. Vincent's Hospital Group and their appearance at the Public Accounts Committee. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. You're very welcome back to the programme. On our panel today, John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD and Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee. Also from that committee with Mary Lou MacDonald from Sinn Féin and Robert Dowds from Labour. Alison O'Connor, political columnist, is here, and Stephen O'Byrne's Director of MKC Communications. A listener says that her son is looked after by a well-known charity, and she wonders if the CEO of that organisation is paid out of money they raised running the Dublin Marathon. Well, I suppose the answer is yes, because they have to have reasonable running costs and people have to be paid. It's the reasonable word that has the question mark after it, I suppose. Now, I want to talk about St. Vincent's Hospital Group, because they also appeared before the Public Accounts Committee this week, and there was a tango between yourself, Mary Lou, and Professor Noel Brown, which was very
Noel Whelan.
He told you that the hospital would swing into compliance, which is one of the more interesting phrases that we heard during the week. Give us your assessment of that appearance.
Swinging into compliance. Professor Whelan had a difficulty in acknowledging the fact that St. Vincent's were non-compliant with public pay rules. Now, he had this difficulty despite the fact that it is beyond question, it is a matter of fact, that they are not in compliance. And the reason they were before our committee is because of their non-compliance. So it was a bit of a tango, as you say. He dug his heels in and wouldn't say the words that we wanted to hear, that they were not compliant. But nonetheless, they're engaged in a process, they tell us now, with the HSE to ensure that the three senior management people are brought back into line with public pay standards.
Are they going to do that, or are they going to pay them out of the private funds so they don't have to adhere to the rules?
Part of the mechanism that they're discussing with the HSE is certainly to move one of the individuals, a Mr. Nicholas German, who I think is the group CEO and currently also the CEO of the public hospital, to move him simply into a single role and to pay him simply from private funds, which means that for a smaller job, Mr. German will still get a very, very handsome salary indeed. It would seem to me an utterly excessive salary. The interesting thing was that the group had gone to some lengths to get legal advice in respect of their compliance. They doggedly insisted that they were within the letter of the law. And interestingly enough, they cited advice from Michael McDool, former Taoiseach and senior counsel, advising them that, in fact, they could continue this practice of puffing up senior people's salaries, which I have to say I found very interesting in the course of the proceedings. So just as we said with the CRC, that you see a systemic problem around Section 38 organisations and arm's length provision of services by the state. In the case of Vincent's group, you have this madness of a public hospital, private hospital, side by side, jointly managed. You have vast amounts of state monies going into these hospitals, and then a confusion, it seems to me, in terms of good governance and good management, and then a flouting of the rules for senior executives in respect of public pay
and
policy.
The consultants,
and
who
of
are
consultants.
Not only supposed to be operating in the public hospital.
Yes,
also
and this was an issue that,
that
was given some consideration. So I think in some respects our work on St. Vincent's perhaps got a bit lost because of the turn of events around
but
the CRC.
That's really what I found myself wondering. I mean, the St. Vincent's people must be so glad about the CRC because it's pushed them off the front pages. But I just wonder, where is the finishing school? Is it here? I would imagine it's somewhere abroad that's expensive, where they all learn the same levels of obfuscation and barefaced cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say that when the St. Vincent's came before us, they're locked into that culture as well. They did not want to answer questions. They did not want to acknowledge that they were paying top-ups and that they were out of the that they weren't observing the regulation from the HSE. They refused to answer questions as to whether or not Mr. German would take a reduction in his €300,000 a year salary and expenses. They then went on to have this exchange with Mary Lou in relation to their legal advice. And it was only when they were pushed and shoved around the meeting room that they gave some information. Now, the fact that CRC were in before them, it did take the media attention, if you like, away. And in fact, I have to say that members were exhausted by the whole episode. And you know, we have to go into greater detail with St. Vincent's. But they're in negotiations with the HSE. They have to come back to us after they do that deal on the 31st of March. And there are many other issues to be addressed because, as I put it to them, they're paying their CEO 300,000 from a fund and a hospital group that actually lost 10.5 million in 2012.
But see, this is the problem, isn't it? And yeah. Mary Lou, you said it there. There's this kind of grey area between the public hospital and the private hospital that investors want to make money out of. And where are the lines?
It's also a big issue for patients, because as patients come into the public hospital, how does that public hospital survive in terms of its income stream versus the movement of those patients across into the
private hospital
once they find that they have health insurance? And how much over and above the odds is being paid in the context of that health insurance to hospitals? You know, that it's difficult to control that.
Very tangled
and
web.
We have to see management structures in place that will separate out all of this.
Okay.
And Vincent's will be back into us again.
Yeah. Stephen. On the Vincent's one, I think that there is a conflict of interest, there is no doubt, between that applied in Mr. Germain holding down both posts. And obviously they're in the process of resolving that, as has been said already. I was struck, though, by something that Alison said when she wondered where people went to get schooled in, you know, the obfuscation that they indulge in. I mean, as somebody who works now in the communications business, exactly of the kind.
You
that,
do it. You teach
no, no, no.
What I would say, and this is where the and I'm just saying that I think anybody who, and it has happened clearly, it happened in the case of the CRC, and it clearly was attempted by others, to go before Oireachtas committees and to be, to put it very, you know, carefully, economical with the truth, is a very, very silly policy to seek to pursue. I mean, if you're going to go in and parallel with that, if there's a forensic analysis being conducted of your business by the HSE and by excellent people now working in the HSE, it appears to me, then, you know, certainly as somebody engaged in this kind of activity, I'd say, you know, this idea that you can go in and tell half your story or, you know, withhold half your story is absolutely daft.
Yeah, I think
I mean, we've seen the extent to which this has bitten people and we haven't seen the end of the story. I mean,
well,
Stephen,
it's a bit of a product of that. That's how we've done business up to this, and people have got away with it. And I think going back to the point I was making earlier about it showing a really strong symbolism in terms of accountability, both the CRC and St. Vincent's. So I imagine there is an awful lot of people in these charities and hospitals and other health services who are shaking in their boots at the moment, because there must, as I said earlier, there must be an awful lot of this going on. And yet, through the CRC and the scrutiny there and through what's happening in St. Vincent's, those people must finally have a sense of, God, they come and couldn't come, could and come and get us now.
But
could I never have had that before.
Could I add one point in reply, though? I agree with you absolutely. And I think we will see much more accountability, much more transparency across all these healthcare institutions, at least now, as part of this exercise. But I am not, in principle, opposed to the idea of senior executives being paid an appropriate rate for the job. And if some people talk that some element of those salaries are top-ups, so be it, so long as it can be justified, you know, with reference to a proper business case.
But Stephen, I think that is a problem.
All of this has been an absolute secret
for the last few years. Not for the last few years, for 20 years. And that is what is causing them all the problem now. And as they come before us at public accounts, they are not up to speed with the new rules that have been set out, I think, by public accounts, that they will be made accountable. And there are 330 organisations under the Section 39 grant system that are paid in excess of a quarter of a million euro, and they have never really been scrutinised. Mm-hmm. And that's where we will have to go next.
Mm. Robert,
and I disagree with you in relation to the payments. Yes, people are entitled to a reasonable pay for a job done, but it needs to be out in the open as to how they're getting that payment.
Absolutely, I have no problem with that. But what I'm saying is, I don't think we can argue necessarily that everybody, that you will get the right person for the job, depending on the level of responsibility, depending on the volume of turnover, the number of staff employed, by saying everybody should only get 100k.
There are three points
I want to make.
First of all, on Thursday, I
received a text saying that every effort was being made in Vincent's Hospital to try and block patients being able to see the proceeds of the Public Accounts Committee. I would like to know whether that actually happened or not. The second thing I'd like to say is, again, the whole issue of how boards are constituted comes up here, because the board of Vincent's Hospital should represent all the interests involved, the patients, the staff of all types, and so on. And the third point is, it really begs the question as to the need, it introduced the question of the need to separate private hospitals entirely from public
from
hospitals.
Public hospitals.
Well, because only 10 of their 200 consultants are actually working fully in the public system.
Okay. Well, Alison, I think it was you who said that Vincent's were probably very glad of CRC during the week. If so, so too were Irish Water. I'm going to talk about Irish Water in just a moment. You're listening to Saturday with Claire Byrne. A quick reminder of our panel: John McGuinness, Alison O'Connor, Stephen O'Byrnes, Mary Lou MacDonald and Robert Dowds. Now, we want to talk about Irish Water, because it emerged a week and a half ago that it had spent 50 million so far on consultants. Now that figure is around 85 million. And Minister Phil Hogan said that he has not micromanaged the project. Stephen, I'm going to come to you on this, because you're one of those dreaded consultants, aren't you? That's what you do, right?
Well, I have nothing to do with Irish Water,
I
assure you.
I understand that. I'm pulling your leg in a way. But, I mean, people who work in the consultancy business must rub their hands with glee when they see, you know, a project like Irish Water coming along with this amount of money to spend on fees.
Well, I think, though, you have to try to disaggregate what is going on here, because, I mean, this was a startup organisation around, you know, 2 billion of assets, apparently. And there is no doubt that I think there is a difference between the relatively humble role that people like myself as a consultant might undertake and the requirement to set up a major IT system that is going to have to service the needs of 2 million customers.
So are you saying that you can understand the need for spending 85 million on consultants in this case?
I could have it explained to me, and I was struck as well, by the way, by the end of the week, and your political the TDs here with me I think can pass judgment on this better, but the sense I had was that after the appearance at the Environment Committee, and then there was a subsequent one I know at the PAC Committee, that the answers that had been given seemed to demonstrate relatively fully and cogently to the public at large, certainly was the verdict of the various POLCORs that I read, that the good explanations had been offered. I mean, I think there was a woeful communications lapse that occurred from the time John Tierney went on the Sean O'Rourke programme 10 days ago through to the middle of the week just finished. And out of that, but there was a high degree of clarity arising. In other words,
well, let's
I suppose
talk
to come
about
to
that.
Your net point.
No, let's talk about that, Stephen, because on the communication side, right, a number of TDs, and Barry Cowan comes to mind, I suppose, first of all, had asked questions of the minister over and over and over again, both Phil Hogan and Fergus Stout, and got nowhere. John Tierney goes on for 22 minutes in the Sean O'Rourke programme, and we get the 50 million figure straight away. Now, there is the problem. And we talk
Claire,
about people avoiding questions
what
and so on.
What makes me wonder about all of that is, now, no better interviewer than Sean O'Rourke to get the mm-hmm. answers, but John Tierney has been around a long time. He would be pretty media savvy. He decides to do that interview, the question comes up, he answers it. They then go before the Environment Committee, and in contrast to the two groups we were mentioning earlier, give very forensic answers, it strikes me, and they don't have to be dragged out of them. In the meantime, you have a Department of the Environment and a minister who were the ones supposed to be giving answers and political accountability, but weren't. And it makes me wonder, what decision John Tierney took that thought, OK, we're under all this criticism, the answers are not being given, and I'll go on with Sean O'Rourke. I just think it's interesting to look behind it.
Well, whatever about why he, and that's interesting to speculate
yeah.
as to
it's
why
the
that
only
happened.
Speculation, yeah.
It seems to me as follows. We didn't have the scope at our committee, nor did the Environment Committee, to actually go line by line to scrutinise that spend on consultants. A couple that jumped out at me was customer engagement. I think people are going to face this water charge, would be mystified by customer engagement, brand development and so on. But the regulator will do that and will, in the final analysis, make a yes or no judgment as to the efficiency and appropriateness of that spending. In my head, the big thing that jumped out to me in respect of all of this, and going back to the point of questions not being asked coming from the Dáil deputies, Brian Stanley, my own colleague, like others, asked many of them, was the fact that the department knew what was happening, had gone to some lengths and was in constant communication with Irish Water to track, to analyse, to ask questions in respect of the entire setting up of a brand new utility, including spend on outside consultancy. They had the information at the very highest level in the department, and they told us at committee that Phil Hogan had every other piece of information, that he was briefed except in relation to this particular issue, that they didn't speak to him in specific terms as regards that spend. And this brings us back to the most basic accountability issue. The minister came out and cried ignorance, said, I didn't know anything about this. And as you said, Claire, he doesn't micromanage matters. It struck me when he said that he wasn't managing things perhaps at all. But that wouldn't be unusual for Phil Hogan. But more to the point, it strikes me as extraordinary that he wouldn't have known that information. It's a brand new utility. It's not like any other humdrum spending. It's a very significant portion of amount of public spending in very difficult times. It's a politically sensitive project, and Phil Hogan didn't
well, if
know.
Well, if you're the minister, the book stops with you. Yes, John.
Correct. Yeah. Let me take up the issue of it being a new utility. Mm. Water services have been with the 34 local authorities for years. The expertise is there and has been built up over those years. The infrastructure is in the ground. What we're talking about here is management and the new meters. it's not a great new science. It's been done before, right across England over the last 20 years.
And the reason Bord Gáis were given the job of parent
Bord
company
were given
was because they had,
the governance issues and the administration in place. And I have to say that I find the amount of money being spent on Irish Water in terms of consultants to be staggering. I think it's staggering. And when you peel it back a little bit...
Even given the size of this new public utility.
Yes, even given the size of it. The local authorities value the infrastructure, by the way, at 11 billion. And Irish Water have set aside for consultants in excess of 6 million euro to do due diligence on all of that. 6 million euro. And prior to that, they paid and are paying for the setup of a transition office made up of county managers, 5.7 million euro. The original report that they got, which they paid for 180,000.
That came out, just to go back that 5.7 million, that came out at the very end, didn't it?
I asked the question because it was mentioned in Ms. Tallon's opening remarks. And I thought I'd ask a question about how much did it cost, thinking that it would be in the matter of thousands. Mm. And when she said 5.7 million...
But who did that, John? Who did that money go? Because I thought I heard the City and County Managers Association
got that money. Yes, that's right. And we have to receive, the Public Accounts Committee have to receive the full details of that. But there's only one office, in my opinion, that should be auditing, and that is the Comptroller and Auditor General. Why do you give vast amounts of money away, taxpayers' money, hard-earned money, and then not have in place a mechanism to audit that figure on behalf of the taxpayer and to have it debated and scrutinised publicly by the Public Accounts Committee? Mm. A simple line in the legislation would have allowed... And just one other thing.
Very quickly,
PQs
we're running out of time.
Won't be answered. FOI will be brought in after the event. And the CNAG is not involved. It's disgraceful.
It is disgraceful.
Robert Dowd, do you want to make a point there?
Several points I want to make. First of all,
you may not
I understand that Brendan Howland will make it possible for parliamentary questions to be answered on this, and there is FOI introduced as well. So that is very important, and it is really important to do that. The second thing I want to say is, what Irish Water has to do is to modernise our whole delivery of water. We are in a crisis situation in much of the country.
Okay, but we're not even at that stage yet. We're not even talking about fixing pipes. Robert, before we finish, can I ask you what you make of how Phil Hogan came through this week and what he said about not micromanaging his own budget?
Well, I mean, I don't think a minister can micromanage every aspect of his budget, and I mean, obviously,
we're
an
not talking about a tenner here. We're talking about 85 million.
I appreciate that, but I mean, I don't think he can be expected to micromanage Irish Water. I mean, for example,
nobody's asking him to micromanage Irish Water.
Well,
they're asking that he would be fully conversant with an astounding sum of money spent on outside consultants in the establishment of this new body that, in the final analysis, Robert,
well,
will be sending out bills to households across
the country. Well, I think that's reasonable, but I think what Mary Lou is saying there is reasonable, but there are so many complications in the delivery of Irish Water.
We haven't time to go through them. We're out of time, Robert. I'm sorry. I have to stop you there, but thank you very much indeed for coming in. Robert Dowds, John McGuinness, Alison O'Connor, Stephen O'Byrnes and Mary Lou MacDonald. That's it for this week. We're back with you next Saturday at 1 o'clock. Have a good weekend.